Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR1, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we're going to be catching up with all things crypto, blockchain, and Web3 with Ellen Ng. She's the founder of Enoa, Enoa.ai. And of course, we also have Iris Ikeda from FinReg Strategies. And I want to welcome you both to Bite Marks Cafe.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Bert.
Yeah, great to have you both on. And, you know, I do want to kind of catch up with what you folks are both doing. And you know, we'll start a little bit with Ellen, because Ellen, you're going kind of like gangbusters with Enoa. And is it just Enoa, or is it Enoa.ai?
It's actually Enoa.
Okay.
You know, I had the .ai there, just, you know,
for the website. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yours is a kind of a blockchain crypto consultancy, right?
Yeah. So we're a local, Hawaii-based blockchain consulting firm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we do projects for both local entities as well as, you know, even national. And then I do have a couple of like international clients that kind of require some consultative work as well.
Yeah, and you've been quite active in the not only the consulting work, but the kind of conference arena, and we'll get into that you know, in a little bit. But I think a lot of your involvement has been bringing people together to either learn more about this or kind of drive some initiatives, and I think that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, so I mean, I think for blockchain tech, you know, adoption to really take off, especially here in the state of Hawaii, there's still a lot of education that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
also, you know, with our state, even though Hawaii, you know, is not a very big state, you know, we are kind of broken into different islands.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are like, you know, it's hard for people to actually know what's happening across our chain of islands. So, you know, there are times where I host events to bring people together. Founders, builders, investors in the space so that, you know, we can all connect. And, you know, I've seen kind of collaboration coming out of that, which is awesome. One other thing that the firm does as well is really a lot of advocacy work, because a lot of that requires kind of interaction with policymakers and, you know, trying to help them understand what, you know, blockchain technology means for
mm-hmm,
the state.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another component of what I do as well.
Yeah, and your background, I mean, is quite good for that. I mean, you spent a good couple of years, I mean, several years over at the HTDC, the Hawaii Technology Development Corporation, and kind of were, you know, in that position of seeing the policy and the government work, you know, firsthand. And I think that's where, you know, your kind of partnership with Iris came up. And Iris, mm-hmm. back when I know I had you on the radio before talking about mm-hmm. some of the work you used to do over at the DCCA, and in particular, you know, the Digital Currency Innovation Lab, which was like right around kind of the pandemic period. But
right.
Yeah, so you've been very much involved with that, but you recently kind of retired and maybe still in some of the consultative work. But what is the remnants, I guess, of the Innovation Lab, and did it gain some traction? Is it a good reference point? I mean, what is it that did you come away with, and what did you sort of leave as a result of the Innovation Lab?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm happy to say that I retired from state government last July,
mm-hmm.
And then started this consulting company for companies who wanted to enhance policies to meet regulatory standards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for crypto, there are not any regulatory standards yet, but working with different states, you know, I'm still working with different state governments
mm-hmm.
to kind of take a look at what the regulatory framework could be. What could it look like? Because at the end of the day, most of the state banking departments, they want to protect consumers, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, you need a regulatory framework to make sure that companies know what the rules of the game are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a game, but know the rules of the road, and consumers could have an avenue to, you know, complain or have a better understanding of what it is that they're getting into.
Right, right, right. And then,
so, and that's why we did the DCI, the Innovation Lab, right? We started that to learn what is a digital currency, what customers were using it for, but really to determine whether or not the state should regulate this industry to promote consumer protection.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, as we were talking with Ellen a couple weeks ago, I think we were ahead of the crowd. We're, you know, such early adopters to do this study
mm-hmm.
that, you know, people weren't ready yet. I think if we were to do the study now,
yeah,
the outcome might be a little different. Excuse me.
Well, so, you know, when you, and I did kind of want to talk to you about that, because during the time when the digital currency lab was going on, I mean, there seemed to be quite a bit of interest in participating in your lab and having companies be a part of it, and mm-hmm. you as a regulator having a good cohort of companies to mm-hmm. base the learnings from.
Right.
And then
they were all very cooperative,
right?
You know, because we wanted to learn and they wanted to, you know, share.
But then, after and you only retired pretty recent, 2024.
Yes.
The innovation lab for the digital currency, when did that actually end? When did that actually wind down?
I think it actually wound down in 2022. The legislation, you know, we developed
mm-hmm.
some legislation with the companies in the lab and outside of the lab
mm-hmm.
That we try to get through in 2023. Of course, it didn't happen. But, you know, I think that the thing that we learned was that the regulatory scheme that we had come up with is being used in other states
mm-hmm.
to regulate, you know, digital currency companies.
Do you find that, you know, the fact that the lab was around, the fact that, you know, both you and Ellen were very much involved with it, there was a good amount of sort of activity and momentum.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to that momentum after 2023 and then into 2024? And of course, you retired, so that mm-hmm. is part of probably a change in your role in it. And then maybe, I don't know, Ellen, I mean, did you see a continued kind of momentum here in Hawaii?
So I see it from two different perspectives. I'm not sure which, where your question is pointing to. If you're talking about momentum in terms of consumer appetite for crypto,
mm-hmm.
I think it's still there. It was dampened a little bit by, you know, some of the crypto scams that happened, like Terra Luna, where, you know, billions of dollars were lost.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We even had a participant in our lab called BlockFi that had to close down because of that. And of course, you know, the scam from FTX as well was probably not helpful in terms of,
mm-hmm.
You know, gaining, I would say, you know, gaining an understanding from local policymakers here about what crypto is about and why that's important.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think on the other side of things, from an innovation perspective, I do see, you know, local startups kind of sprouting out here in Hawaii, building on blockchain technology.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the summit that I put together last year, our first summit, you know, we had a couple of local founders here that were showcasing what they were building on blockchain, ranging from gaming all the way to like a venture studio and even like a DeFi protocol. So we have, you know, I think we have promising founders coming out of Hawaii that are building on the blockchain and with, you know, different use cases within crypto itself.
Well, you know, I think there's still quite a bit of stuff to talk about, not only here in Hawaii, but at the federal level as well, influencing some of the activities that are going on. So why don't we hold that thought? We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Ellen Ng, founder of Inoa, and Iris Ikeda from FinReg Strategies. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Chaminade University.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum. And if you're just joining us, we're catching up with all things crypto, blockchain, Web3 technologies with Ellen Ng, founder of Inoa, and Iris Ikeda, coming out of retirement. No, she's got her own consultancy called FinReg Strategies. And right before the break, you know, Ellen, you were talking about some of the activities that I guess continue to go on with some of the local companies, maybe as a result of some of the momentum both you and Iris helped to build with, you know, with the Digital Currency Innovation Lab and, you know, Ellen, as you start to see, you know, what's happening at the federal level, what's really moving the needle on some of this? I mean, and of course, you know, a lot of our attention is being taken away by all things AI, right? So what are some of the things that you are keeping track of in terms of how policy, maybe at the federal level, is influencing this Web3 technology?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the biggest wins so far that, you know, the crypto industry would say would be the Genius Act that passed through the Senate just last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now headed to the House, you know, for another round of votes. So the Genius Act basically stands for Guidance in Establishing National Innovation in U.S. Stablecoins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, not sure, you know, how many people listening in actually know what stablecoins are, but, you know, they're basically, you know, a cryptocurrency that's tied to a fiat currency,
mm-hmm.
For instance, the USD. So, you know, that provides, as the name suggests, you know, stability as opposed to volatility in the cryptocurrency. So there are lots of use cases for stable coins. But, you know, with the Genius Act passing, it actually provides a regulatory framework, you know, that would actually secure US's leadership and standing in the global financial landscape. But again, you know, pointing back to what Iris was talking about earlier, it also allows for a lot more consumer protection for, mm-hmm. you know, just, yeah, people who are, you know, participating in projects that, you know, involve stable coins. So, you know, I think this on the federal level, this is something that I celebrate. I'm also paying a lot of attention to. We have two other bills that are in motion, the Stable Act, I believe, and then the other one was the Clarity Act, which are both, you know, again, regulatory frameworks, market structure bills that hopefully would, you know, get through the Senate and the House in due course. Yeah.
And Iris, the work that you guys did with the lab, I mean, it was largely focused around crypto safety, right? Just to give people a good understanding of what they're getting into.
Right, because it was so new, and you know, the industry, not just in Hawaii, but kind of across the nation, is still pretty new, and we wanted to make sure, at least on the state side, we wanted to make sure that customers knew what they were getting into, they understood what it is that they were buying, and also to understand that there might not be any consumer protection if, you know, these companies fail, which did happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not that unusual. I just want to say it's not that unusual for these companies to fail or go bankrupt. It's a new industry, and in any new industry, you're going to have a number of companies that will be successful and some will not be successful. So, you know, this is just not it's just part of the evolution of the industry.
Right, right. And Ellen, you know, you described some of these legislation happening at the federal level, and again, it's still needing to pass, you know, Senate, House, got to get signed by the president. What do you see as a result of that? Is it gonna really kind of help create more momentum around a stablecoin creation, or what is it? What's the impact to, let's say, the business community? As these bills, in all likelihood, will pass, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, they're kind of bipartisan, right? And so
but yeah, So for the Genius Act, you know, I mean, it has been classified as bipartisan. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, though, for Hawaii, you know, our state legislators, specifically senators, did not vote in favor of that. So that was actually a little bit disappointing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. So, but that being said, you know, I think to your question, it provides a lot more clarity for builders and founders, right? Mm-hmm. Assuming you're an entrepreneur, you know, and you're an innovator in this space, your project involves stable coins. You need to understand what the guardrails are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you building, you know, are you building responsibly? Are you breaking any laws, right? Both on, you know, especially for if you're based in Hawaii where there are no, you know, guardrails for, you know, on the state level, you know, you would have to then adhere or fall back on any national or federal guardrails, right, as you build. So I think having, you know, bills like this getting passed and accepted actually helps with a lot of innovation and faster innovation, because the U.S. is actually playing catch up right now compared to other regions around the world that actually have regulatory frameworks already.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee, you know, the state legislators getting into this policy making? I know you talked about at the federal level, right? Our congressional teams or congressional representatives, perhaps you said not voting for the Genius Act. But what about at the state level? Are you seeing any legislation kind of emerge out of the state legislators?
So right now it seems a little quiet.
Mm-hmm, right.
Unfortunately, you know, I think, you know, to your point earlier about AI, you know, I think, and also to Iris's point, there are other priorities. So, you know, this whole idea of crypto and blockchain and so on, it's kind of on the back burner right now,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mean that we cannot raise, you know, and bring back the conversations. I think this might be a good kind of segue to talk about Stand With Crypto, if that's okay with you, Bert. So it's actually like a national advocacy group. But we are kind of trying to bridge, you know, national, you know, legislative and policy making activities with the state level, and trying to help advocate on the state level and helping our local policymakers here understand what, you know, what founders are looking for,
mm-hmm.
and you know, from the perspective of crypto, you know, guardrails and legislation, so that you know they can help formulate these local legislations here. You know, without, you know, having to rely on, you know, another state doing it first, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, so kind of going back to what Iris, you know, and myself, we were doing it with the DCIL, bringing that back, hopefully,
mm-hmm.
In some other capacity.
So you mentioned real quickly the Stand With Crypto. It's like a crypto alliance. And maybe mm-hmm. I'd like to give you a chance to kind of explain what does this crypto alliance include, and how is Hawaii involved with that? You know, are there members in Hawaii that are part of the alliance? So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back after a short break to continue our conversation with Ellen Ng, founder of Inoa, and Iris Ikeda from FinReg Strategies. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum, right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to Ellen Ng. She's the founder of Inoa, and Iris Ikeda from FinReg Strategies. And right before the break, you know, Ellen, you were talking about this crypto alliance, and maybe you can describe what exactly is this crypto alliance, and it's called something like Stand With Crypto, right? And
yeah.
I think there's an event that's coming up. So what, maybe you can help share a little bit about what is the alliance and what is the event that this alliance is helping to kind of sponsor and get the word out on.
Sure. So, you know, the Stand With Crypto Alliance, you know, it's a national advocacy group
mm-hmm.
that champions for clear common sense regulations for the crypto industry.
Mm-hmm.
And why that's important is right now, as we speak, 52 million Americans own crypto.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the Hawaii-based advocates that are registered with Stand With Crypto, I think we are at about 1,471 people right now.
Well, that's pretty good.
So, yeah, that's actually, you know, really amazing. I mean, our numbers are still really small compared to other states. I represent the state of Hawaii. As of now, I believe there are like either half, so around like 24, 25 states that are being represented in Stanford Crypto.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you know, what we are fighting for is, you know, protecting consumers' right to own and use crypto, basically helping with, you know, legislation to foster innovation through crypto and create jobs, right, in Web3, and also just to maintain U.S. leadership in the development of blockchain and Web3 technology.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in your efforts to achieve this, what is this? Tell us a little bit about this event that's coming up. In a very new future.
Yeah. So Stanford Crypto actually, we are one of the co-sponsors for this event called Fortify.
Mm-hmm.
It's a consumer crypto safety event that, one part of it's happening on July 8th at the Entrepreneur Sandbox. It's a free event. It's actually open to beginners who are, you know, basically learning how to deal with cryptos, whether they're investing in crypto or, you know, they're just trying to understand how it works and they're crypto curious. But if they come to this event, well, the exciting part is, you know, we're going to have Iris actually join us in the fireside chat to talk a little bit more about, you know, her work with the Digital Currency Innovation Lab,
mm-hmm.
how was that important to consumer protection as the first part of that event. And then the second part of the event, we're going to, you know, have a couple of hands-on activities to teach kind of best practices, you know, on how to navigate potential scams, secure digital assets and things like that. So it's geared towards beginners. So if you're not, you know, in the space or ready, you know, you are more than welcome to come because it's really, you know, kind of teaching and learning together.
Mm-hmm. And of course, you already kind of asked the question that I was going to ask, which is, Iris, how are you going to be involved with this event coming up, you know, on the 8th? We already kind of know that, but, you know, what is it that you want to help convey as a part of the fireside chat? And Ellen sort of alluded to the fact that you want to reinforce the idea of safety and just be aware of what it is that you're getting into. And so how do you, I mean, it's one thing to say that, right? So what do you want people to actually do once they get into this business?
So, you know, this is just like any other business, right? They do a lot of, you know, they should be doing a lot of research or some due diligence
mm-hmm,
on the company
mm-hmm.
that they want to, you know, work with, just like they would if they, you know, choosing a new bank.
So
it's sort of the same sort of idea. You do some due diligence on what the bank does,
mm-hmm.
whether you like that or not. Similarly, you look at the crypto company. Is that, you know, the direction you want to go? What sort of consumer protections do they have? Do they have some policies? Are they going to protect your identity? Are they going to, you know, make sure that there's some security? So it's sort of the same thing. I want people to think about this as if they were choosing a new bank for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to be protected.
And
protected on the crypto side.
And if you were to suggest people to be more aware, what is it that they need to, I mean, and you brought up some examples. What is it that they need to ask the question? If they're doing due diligence, what do you want them to really kind of pay attention to? Because a lot of the companies that they're probably going to be dealing with are brand new in and of themselves, right? So how do you really mm-hmm. dig deep to find out whether they are really reliable or trustworthy?
So a lot of companies have read on their website, right, what their policies are.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take a look to see whether or not they have these policies of confidentiality. Are they going to keep your identity secure?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have any privacy? What's going to happen if you have questions? Is there somebody to contact? I mean, so, you know, once you can figure all of that out,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe you have more trust in using a particular company over another company.
Got it. So good. So this is coming up on the 8th. Now, Ellen, you got the blockchain summit that's coming up too, right?
Yeah, but I think before I just talk about the blockchain summit, just really quickly, right, on that whole crypto safety thing.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes a little bit of common sense too. So for instance, there was a hack on Coinbase with, you know, where people lost money. But the thing is, you know, as with in traditional finance, your bank would never call you. So it's the same thing, like your crypto exchange will never call you. But for some reason or the other, people who are, you know, kind of new to the space, they think, oh, you know, my cryptocurrency exchange is calling me to ask me for certain things and information, and it's okay to give it to them, right? So, you know, we're kind of trying to teach people how to navigate those kind of stuff in the workshop on July 8th.
Mm-hmm,
but but just back to the blockchain summit. You know, we started the Hawaii Blockchain Summit last year during Honolulu Tech Week in September.
Right.
We're going to bring it back this year because we had a really positive response. But we are rebranding it to the Pacific Blockchain Summit to make it a little bit bigger, a little bit more inclusive, because we have speakers coming in from the Pacific Islands, you know, who are also leveraging a lot of Web3 innovation, you know, for economic opportunities and, you know, and so on their islands as well. So it's going to be on September 12th this year during Honolulu Tech Week.
And I'm interested in the fact that you've uncovered some of the activities that are going on in the Pacific Islands. I mean, you know, I think you kind of alluded that it was a little slow here in Hawaii. I'm happy to hear that some of the other Pacific Islands are actually being more aggressive in this area.
I think when I say slow, I'm talking about slow in terms of any legislative advancement in crypto.
Uh-huh.
But I, you know, Hawaii is definitely not slow when it comes to building. So we have our fair share of founders here, mm-hmm. you know, across the islands, who are building, like I said, on the blockchain. And in terms of the Pacific, mm-hmm. you know, they are using the technology for a lot of different use cases, from decentralized economic like marketplaces, from digital identity, you know, from even decentralized finance protocols. So, you know, a lot of them, number one, they don't have a lot of stability in their local currencies, and therefore they need to rely on, you know, like cryptocurrencies are like probably a better alternative to their local currencies, for instance.
Mm.
And, you know, some of the places, for instance, the Marshall Islands are actually way more advanced in terms of legislation as well. When it comes to, you know, creating different or alternative forms of company structures that allow them to make, you know, money off registrations and things like that. So
there's
a lot that we can learn from them. But at the same time, I think, again, being the U.S., you know, all these Pacific islands are looking towards for legislative, I would say, kind of leadership,
mm-hmm.
you know, and trying to see what we're doing. Because, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, the U.S. is the financial powerhouse,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever we're doing makes sense for them. And, you know, unfortunately, I think, like I said, we are playing catch up, but there's a lot that, you know, our neighbors are trying to learn from us as well.
So Ellen, if people are interested in the Fortify as well as the Pacific Blockchain Summit, where can they go find out more about it?
Yeah, so unfortunately, Fortify is on Luma. I think, Bert, maybe we can give you the link, because it's not the most friendly-looking link for you to put on the website. As for the summit, it's simple. It's pacificblockchainsummit.com.
Sounds good. I'll put that up on our show notes. Ellen Ng is the founder of Enoa, and Iris Ikeda is the founder of FinReg Strategies. Hey, I both want to thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Bert, for having me.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll find out the latest with the True Initiative. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find a podcast of tonight's show on BiteMarksCafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HBR One every Friday or anytime via the HBR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe. You stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.